The Gemara Menachos on Daf Chaf Chasam and Aleph lists a whole range, a whole registry of elements that are ma'akev one another. Anyone ever see this Mishnah before today? Like what appears in the Mishnah? Shnei Seirim. By the way, how does the Mishnah get to this? Anyone know? What? No, that's the launching pad for Tchelet. And because of this, the entire section of Stam is launched because Tchelet is Ma'akev Isalava, and that's the beginning of the fourth parak. And in this Mishnah, we talk about the fact that every letter is Ma'akev a parsh of Tefillin, every letter is Ma'akev a parsh of Mezuzah. Therefore, the Gemara has a long conversation about Tefillin and Mezuzah. So, Barak, it's an interesting sidebar. That all of a sudden, in the middle of Menachos, from Chav Tes till around Mem Vav, to about, 20 pages, 20 Dapim, 20 Blot, all of a sudden you have a discussion about Stam because of this Mishnah. But what does the Mishnah start talking about one thing being Ma'akev the other? The answer is, if you look back at the previous Mishnah, I know that Moshe just made a Siyum with Mishnayos. Look back at the previous Mishnah. Previous Mishnayos talk about a Karban Mincha. This is Mesechas Menachos. Is the oil Ma'akev the Seles? Is the Seles Ma'akev the oil? Can you bring a Mincha without oil? Can you bring a Mincha without Seles? So because the Mishnah beforehand had talked about the interchangeability, interdependence between Seles and Shemen, so the Mishnah on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph talks about what about the two Seirim on Yom Kippur? Are they Ma'akev? What about the two Kivasim on Shavuos? Are they Ma'akev? And because the Mishnah has a list of Devarim HaMa'akevim, one of the Devarim HaMa'akevim is Shiva Kini Menorah. The seven branches of the Menorah are Ma'akev. So that's how we have a discussion about the Menorah in the base of Mikdash, right in the middle of Menachos. You would think it should be maybe in Midos, you should be somewhere else. Right in the middle of Menachos, the Gemara talks about the Menorah. Okay? Now, on Chav Chesem and Aleph, this mission about Ikruv is on Chav Zayin. On Chav Chesem and Aleph, the Gemara, I'll just jump to the point because we're in such a time crunch now. The Gemara is a very interesting halacha. The Gemara says as follows. The three halachos that are unique to Menorah as opposed to all the other kelim in the Mikdash. What are they? Miksha. Has to be solid. It can't be assembled. Zav, has to be kikar. Now, there are other kelim that are zav. It has to be kikar zav, which either means at least a minimum of kikar gold. Don't just take whatever gold you want, but take a minimum of a large amount of kikar and fashion the menorah from it. According to some Rishonim, actually, it has to be precisely kikar. Not minimum of kikar, but precisely kikar. But either way, when you made other kelim, like the Aron, when you plated the Aron with gold, you took as much gold as you needed. You didn't have to measure the gold beforehand. Here you have to measure the gold into kikar. It has to be a specific amount, or at least a minimum amount. So one is miksha, one is kikar. What's the third halacha? The embellishments, kaftarim, givim, and frachim. The knobs, and the cups, and the flowers. You don't have them on any other clay. So these are the three characteristic features of the menorah. But yet, the Gemara says, ba zav, ba kaftarim, givim, and frachim. Eina ba zav, b'di'evid, you could make a menorah from other metals. The Gemara darshins it. So if you make a menorah from other metals, you don't need givim, kaftarim, and frachim. Ba zav ba miksha. If you're fashioning the menorah zav, you need to make it miksha. If you construct the menorah from non-gold, then you don't really need miksha. Ba zav ba kikar. Eina ba zav, eina ba kikar. If you make a silver menorah, as much silver as you want, no minimum, as long as you have a menorah. This is a very, very strange interdependence. Why should they be dependent upon one another? If there are three halachas of the menorah, and the menorah is kasher b'di'evit if it's not zav, so you should still try to insert those three elements, the kikar, the miksha, and the embellishments, the gavim, kaftarim, and frachim, even if you're making a menorah, b'di'evit, from silver, from copper, from lead, whatever you're making it from. Why all of a sudden is there a tliya between a menorah? It needs all these features. It needs gavim, kaftarim, and frachim. It needs kikar. It needs miksha. But if you don't have zav, you can suspend these. Why? What's the logic here? So evidently, this is what I want you to see today. Evidently, listen very carefully. Evidently, there are two tracks to menorah. There's a track of zav, and on that track, these elements have meaning. Then there's a track of other metals, in which you still have a menorah, but you have a very, very different menorah. So to use the cliche, it's tzvedinim. There are two different alternatives to menorah. Menorah can play two different functions. Or to say it a little bit differently, the menorah zav plays both functions, function A and function B, whatever we'll decide those functions are. But the higher function of A that you need zav for, therefore in that type of menorah, you need kikar, you need mixture, you need kivim, kaftar, mujer. Then there is a different type of menorah, which is b'di'evet kasher, from silver, from copper, from other metals. That plays a very different function, and that function doesn't require kikar mikshah. Otherwise, try to turn them into categories, not just arbitrary. There's a categorical definition of a menorah that justifies, or that warrants, gevim, when I say gevim, I mean all three, gevim, kikar, mikshah. There's a different type of menorah, which is still a menorah kshera, but it doesn't demand all these elements. Especially just trying to put our fingers on those different categories, and then, of course, using those categories to better understand the menorah. So that's why I really wanted you to see this today. I'll take you through. Some of you saw the sugya, some of you didn't, but we're using the exact same tools. What is migo? Is migo a koach? Is migo a beirah? Maybe it's both. What are the nafkaminos? So don't think that all of a sudden we're moving into kachim, we're moving into tyrus, it's a whole new... And this is part of the Briscoe Revolution. Because for centuries, people walked away from learning kachim in tyrus and Sodom Yisrael, because it just wasn't so relevant. So people would learn nashim and nezikim, a little bit of kachim, and then they stopped learning kachim. And now all of a sudden, the Briscoe Revolution was not just creating a language for ideas that had been latent and ambiguous, but also stretching it to kachim, stretching it as the Rav did to Moed ultimately, which was a big chiddush of the Rav. If you go into Brisk, there's a whole chain of Brisk Bate Medrash in Yerushalayim today. It's like it's seen like the most prestigious base medrash to go to. Like people, oh, get me, I get calls sometimes. Can you help my child get into Brisk? You call the wrong person. My sister's like, oh, you're learning Gush, you're teaching Gush. But getting into the Brisk Bate Medrash, it's the most prestigious thing. Remember, most boys in a more yeshivish background in America, they don't come right after high school. The general path for boys your age, let's say, who graduated from Philly Yeshiva or Neri Yisrael High School, or Telzi Yeshiva, people that went to more yeshivish high schools in America, they'll spend 2-3 years in Bate Medrash in America. Sometimes in high school they learn with, sometimes other yeshivas, other Bate Medrash. Then they'll come to Eretz Yisrael, and they'll learn in Mir or Brisk. I get the sense that Mir is like, again, I'm not inside to this world, but I guess since Mir is everyone can go to Brisk, you really need to, you know, be a big, big Talmud Chacham, or at least have a connection of a Rebbe Dan Tishin Gosh, a real connection into Brisk. And then you go back to Lakewood, and that becomes, you know, the trail that most people follow. Not everyone, but many, many people follow. Anyway, so if you go into the Brisk Bate Medrash today, they're learning Kachim. It's literally, there's no Bava Metzia. I don't know, but I'm saying they're spending the whole day learning Kachim and learning Rav Elvel, who spent a lot of time applying Brisker methodology to Kachim. So here, I want you to see the Brisker methodology. How else would you explain it? How else would you explain, well, if I have Zav, I have all these requirements. Then, evidently, there are two types of Minar. What are the two types of Minar? So, to understand this, let me take a step back. What's the function of the Mishkan? So the function of the Mishkan is all about chronology, all about when the Mishkan was instructed. Famous machlokas between who and whom? Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi feels that the Beis HaMikdash was an atonement for Egel Azav, was a response. Even though it appears in Parshas Truma before Kitisa, Rashi's famous Shita in Mukta Mukha Batara. So essentially, Moshe came down from Har Sinai, Yud Aleph Tishrei, fresh with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pledge to forgive us, and he said, Hashem now wants us to build a Mishkan to atone for the Chet HaEgel. Ramban says, no, the Chet HaEgel is not the trigger for the Mishkan. The Mishkan was conceived, imagined, and instructed well before the Egel, Parshas Truma. The purpose of the Mishkan is to create a residence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Egel put the plans on the shelf, put everything on hold, had to recover from the Egel. After the Egel was repaired, then Moshe came down and said, let's restart the process. Now this chronology affects how you view the Mishkan. Is the Mishkan primarily a place of korbanos and avodah and trying to atone, as Rashi's chronology implies? Essentially, Rav Aaron rejected this, but in theory, you could make the claim that if not for the Egel, there wouldn't have been a Mishkan. Going to Rashi, had we not sinned in the Egel, would have walked into Eretz Yisrael and built a Beis HaMikdash. There wouldn't have been a Mishkan. Mishkan is the only response to. Rav Aaron disagreed with that, but in theory, you can make that point from Rashi. Because according to the Ramban, the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan certainly, is not for Avodah primarily. It's to have a base for Hashem, to have a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The beginning, the first Ramban in Truma, it's a very famous Ramban, is to take the experiences of Har Sinai and transform them from the magical and the epiphanous and revelation to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu be there on a daily basis. You need to institutionalize what happened in Har Sinai. Har Sinai is a one-off event, mountains, thunder, lightning. Now, how do you have a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You can encounter him on a daily basis. And the Mishkan is that place. So the Mishkan has two functions. One is a house for Hashem. One is a place for Avodah. Now, that dual function for the Mishkan, right? Of course, they're both true, right? It's not like one or the other. They're both true. Those dual functions for the Mishkan also trickle down and affect how we view the Klei HaMishkan. Are Klei HaMishkan facilitators of Avoda? Or are Klei HaMishkan, what would you say according to Ramban? Give me an English word. What would Klei HaMishkan be? What would the Shulchan be? What would the Menorah be according to the Ramban? If it's a house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're not the ritual bases. They're not Kalin to facilitate ritual. What are they?
Furniture.
They're furniture. You're building a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You put a table. You're building a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You put a candelabra. You're building a house for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Namely, what are the Klei HaMikdash? The Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban creates two different paradigms as to what the Mishkan is. And that affects the function of the Mishkan. And as it trickles down, because we know everything trickles down, now all of a sudden it affects the function of the Klei HaMishkan. So if you look at the Kalim, are the Kalim Makomos of Avodas HaMishkan, as Rashi's chronology would support? Or the Klei HaMishkan, the Klei HaMikdash, essentially furniture to glorify Kadosh Baruch Hu's home? Well, again, the answer to that question is both. But out of all the Kalim, which Klei would you sense is the Klei in which the furniture aspect is the most heightened and emphasized? Menorah, for two reasons. Why? Number one, because... Very good. There's no karbanos whatsoever involved in the menorah. Now you might ask yourself, well, what about the shulchan? But the shulchan was involved in the karbanos. The bazichen. The shulchan had two cups of ketores that were actually sacrificed in the mizbech every Shabbos. So if you looked at the shulchan, you're seeing a karban participant. So like the mizbech, you're seeing karbanos. If you look at the menorah, there's no karbanos. And that's why I mentioned this the other day in Shira. That's why according to many Rishonim, Hadlakas Menorah is Kshera Bazar. Because this is not an avodah. Hadlakas, it's a very interesting question. Is Hadlakas Neros Shemin in the Beis HaMikdash considered avodah's Beis HaMikdash? The fascinating Rashi, which I gave you. Anyone see the Rashi in Shabbos Tzedek Beis? Rashi, the Gemara Tzedek Beis wants to know what types of Hotzah on Shabbos are considered Aser. Because anything that they did in the Mishkan would be Aser. Things they didn't do in the Mishkan would be Mutter. So if I carry something on my head, if I carry something in my left hand, is it considered Hotzah? And according to a Braisa, Rashi quotes, Elazar, HaKohen, was carrying four things. One in his right hand, one in his left hand, one in his fanny pocket, and one, what was his head? What was the fourth one? On his shoulders. On his shoulders. I forgot the Rashi. On his shoulders. And one of the things he was carrying was Shem and HaMenorah. Wait a second. According to some Rishonim, it's very, very intricate. We can only learn Melecha Shabbos from Karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, not from construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Whatever they did for construction, that doesn't serve as the paradigm for Avodah. Only day-to-day activities. So if the Shemen wasn't a Karban, can we really learn about the way Elazar carried the Shemen, what Hotzah is? If Shemen isn't a Karban, that's the famous question on Rashi. That's really where the debate comes out. Is the Shemen HaMenorah, is that a Karban? Or is that a carbon? It's just part of the structure. It's part of the glory of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you look at the Ramban that I gave you on your sheet, this is the Ramban from Parshas Balotzcha. He says this aspect of the menorah pretty clearly. He says, the Hiskir Zahav, the last line of the Ramban, why does the Torah demand that the menorah be complete Zahav? Ki kein yeh mitzvah ledaros la'asosa mimenu. This is a very, very famous four-word phrase in the Ramban. He's talking about the menorah, but people quote the Ramban about the Mishkan. Leromeim es beis Elokeinu, to beautify, to glorify, to lend majesty to the house of Hashem. So you have this beautiful gold candelabra right in the middle of the Azara. Everyone walks in or looks from the outside and just bedazzled. The sun shines off of the gold. And you see the light. You see the Nisim. And all of a sudden, you see the menorah. So now all of a sudden, now follow carefully. I want you to see not what I'm saying, but how to build and how to think. So now all of a sudden, we're seeing that there are two patterns for the menorah. The menorah could be a kli for avoda, in the loose sense, whether you call hadlaka avoda or not, but a kli for the service of lighting the menorah. And it could also be a, what's the other function of the menorah? Not just a technical, practical candelabra to light in order to facilitate and help you perform the function of hadlaka. What else is it? Beautiful adornment, beautiful ornament for the Beis HaMikdash. So the menorah has two functions. Well, when will it serve both functions if it is made of gold? When will it only serve the practical function? Silver. To say it in more lamdisha terms, I haven't seen this in any sefer. I haven't seen this in halach, but if there were halach, the sefer would write as follows: Minaras avoda versus minaras leromeim. Is it menorah for avoda or is it menorah l'ramim beis elokim? Menorah as yofi, menorah as hidur. So if it's gold, then it's both. It's both a menorah to facilitate lighting. It's also a menorah to make the Beis HaMikdash beautiful, Mishkan. If it's just, for whatever reason, they didn't have gold, the Hashmonaim couldn't find gold in the beginning, they make it from iron, they make it from copper, they make it from brass, they make it from other forms, okay, so there you have a menorah that allows you to light. But you don't have a menorah to beautify the Beis HaMikdash because it's not gold. Oh, when you don't have gold, you only have one halacha of the menorah, not the other halacha of the menorah. You only have menorah sadlaka, not menorah siofi. Oh, so maybe there are certain halachas about the menorah that are necessary only to provide yofi, but they're not necessary for practical reasons. Can you think of three halachas that don't have any practical reason? What are the three halachas that have no practical service? Miksha, kikar, and vim. So all of a sudden, now I understand the brisa. And I'll tell you how this helps us in a moment. But now all of a sudden, what I've done is I've created two different menorahs. That's where I really wanted to stick this year in, to show you that what we're learning above Metziah gives you the keys to Shas. This is all above Metziah. This is all Shomrim, two different halachas of Shomrim. It's all creating categories at one. Okay? Here's our categories. Again, not one or the other, but the menorah has two functions to it. What we're calling menoras hadlaka versus, again, this strange phrase, but menoras yofi. And the nafkamina would be, can you have one menorah without the other? Can you have a menoras hadlaka without menoras yofi? So one would be shar matachos. If you have other types of metals, then all of a sudden you'd have menoras hadlaka you'd have, menoras yofi you would not have, and therefore, just to change the colors a little bit, I don't have any colors today, we have to hurry up. Therefore, no miksha, you don't need miksha, no zaha, no kikar, you won't need kikar, and no gibiyah. Now all of a sudden, okay, this is the second part of this year today in 7 minutes or less, now all of a sudden I want to start thinking, what other parts of the menorah could I say, oh, maybe it's only necessary for yofi, not for hadlaka, like what? Where else could I apply this? We'll see this in a moment. Because the Gemara applies it. Now that I have a thought, now that I have a category, so that if it's not zahav, then I don't need givim. If it's not zahav, I don't need kikar. If it's not zahav because I only have that scaled down menorah, so what other parts of the menorah could I say, oh, that's not really necessary to have a menorah, that's only necessary for yofi. And if it's not zav, I won't really need it. We'll see this in a few moments, okay? So that's why you're not just creating a category to explain this seemingly arbitrary distinction, but once you have a category, you can then use that category to apply to other halachos that the Gemara doesn't apply to in the Rishonim, okay? Now, before we think about expanding the category, it could be that this is an interesting way to answer a question of Tosfos in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga, Misal the Gemara in Chagiga, Chavav and Beis, has two deos whether the din of Tamid applies to the menorah, right? The word Tamid is used about which Kli HaMishkan, anyone know? Lachem Panim Lefanai Tamid. So the Shulchan is Tamid, which is in the context of Chagiga, how they could be mitahir the Shulchan after the regal, where possibly Kohanim Tameim touch the Shulchan if there's a din of Tamid. Without the Shulchan, you're missing a fundamental feature of the Beis HaMikdash of the Mishkan. And because the menorah is hushva to the Shulchan, so according to one daya, there's a halacha of Tamid in the menorah. So Tosfos asks the following kasha. How could there be a din of Tamid in the menorah? On the Shulchan, there's always lechem. On the menorah, the candles went out after a certain point in the day, right? It wasn't always Chanukah. The candles went out. By this time in the morning, the candles, the oil of the menorah was extinguished. So for the intervening time between when the candles or the oil went out and the next hadlaka, you're missing Tamid. So what is Tosfos' answer? You want to see the Tosfos in Chagiga? So Tosfos says, well, there was one candle that was always lit, the Ner Maravi. Ner Maravi was lit through a nace, according to Shita Tosfos. So since there was always one candle, one oil always lit on the menorah, so you always had a dinner Tamid. You could walk in any time to base and make, oh, the menorah is lit, there's Tamid. Based on what we've said today, what's another way to answer Tosfos? Question the assumption. Tosfos' assumption is to achieve Tamid, you need a lit menorah. What is the other answer? Maybe to achieve Tamid, step one, you don't need a lit menorah. Even you're skipping steps again. Go slowly, guys. It wouldn't train your mind. You don't need it. Just first technical, then abstracted. You don't need a lit menorah, even a non-lit menorah. That's the technical assumption. How could a non-lit menorah achieve Tamid? Because a menorah that's not lit is still a menorah self. Okay, so build first step and then go to the next step. Tosfos' assumption is practical. Technical assumption is if the menorah isn't lit, it's not Tamid. who says maybe menorah that's not lit is tamid. How would you explain that, Benny? Ah, because the menorah that's not lit is still functioning as a menorah siofi, not a menorah. So it could be that Tosfos disagrees with Maim Halach, because Tosfos is so concerned to make sure that one of the oil bays was lit all the time in order to achieve tamid. If you really feel that a menorah has this other function of beautifying the base hamikdash, and the beauty comes without candles, just by the candelabra, you look at a chandelier, it's beautiful. So why does Tosfos struggle to justify tamid? Because there was one candle and one oil that was always lit. Could be Tosfos would disagree with this. Yes, Ellie.
But that's true. The Gemara would have to qualify and say it could only be, like, it could only be tamid if it's a menorah shel zahav. Because if not, then there's no
yofi.
You would have to have.
No, maybe it would be true. Okay, now, yes, Binyamin.
We can say it's also like Tamid Shel Shachar, Minarabai, it's every Tamid in the sense that it's every day.
Right, Tosfos isn't assuming that. The Gemara is not assuming. The Gemara is saying Tamid because otherwise you won't have a problem taking the Shulchan out for a few minutes to be Tavol in the Mikvah. So at least that Gemara is assuming that halachically, at least the word Tamid means minute by minute, second by second. Okay? So now we could take this model and say, well, what other parts? This is the key turning point of the Shia, and we'll just maybe give one or two examples. What other parts of the menorah could you say, you know what, that's not essential for the core menorah. That's just necessary for the menorah's hadlaka, for the menorah's yofi. But I don't really need that to make a menorah. I have a menorah without this. Like I have a menorah without gevim. I only need gevim if I want to make that super menorah, and that super menorah is only feasible if I zav. And I have a menorah without miksha. I just need miksha if I want to make that super menorah, the beautiful menorah. And I have a menorah without kikar. But then, what other parts of the menorah? So what does the Gemara talk about? Tosfos talks about the legs, or the base, and the Gemara Menachosim Peches. But we're not going to get to it. Talks about the base. Do you need base? Neiros, do the base have to be miksha? But what does the Gemara in Chafchesim and Aleph talk about? Well, by that same notion, if you don't have zav, you don't need miksha. If you don't have zav, you don't need kikah. If you don't have zav, you don't need givim. Why don't you say if you don't have zav, you don't need kanim? You're right, Niva? You don't have zav, you don't need kanim. So what does the Gemara answer? The Ema, look at the Gemara. The Ema, let's say, ba zav, ba kanim, eina ba zav, eina ba kanim. You don't need kanim if you don't have zav. Now it's interesting, what type of menorah does the Gemara envision in Havamina? There are two da'as in the Rishonim. One da'ah is this would be the menorah. Little slabs. Menorah, 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 menorah. If you don't have kanim, what would your menorah look like? Some say, no, it would just be like this. It would just be, you know, like you know, basically a shelf, okay, without even separating the neiros. What would a menorah without kanim look like? What was the Gemara envisioning in the Havamina? So what does the Gemara say? Nah, you always need kanim, even if you don't have zav, because without kanim, what is it? Tamut. Now, based on the brisker way we read this Gemara, what would your answer be? As opposed, come on, follow through. As opposed to miksha, kikar, and gevim, which are only additives to the yofi, but you have a menorah without them, you have a menorah sadlaka without them. Without kanim, you don't have one word. You don't have a menorah. Say it in Yiddish. Nisht, kein, menorah. A menorah could be, you said it the right way, I just wanted to say it more powerfully. A menorah could be a menorah without kikar. A menorah could be a menorah, it just can't be that super menorah of menorah's yofi. So if you have zav, you need, if you don't have zav, you just scale down the menorah. I mean, you don't have to take away gevim, but if you want to, you can scale down the menorah to its bare minimum structure. One second, Levi. But to take away kanim are integral to the menorah. And without kanim, you don't have a menorah. What do we call something that's not a menorah? A pomet. We call it in English a torch. The Gemara calls it a pomet. A pomet would be like a little lantern. I'm just looking for the Gemara's term. I have to find the Shita Mikubetz that I couldn't find it in my house last night. I'll find it in a photocopy. That's what the Shita says. What does Rashi say in Menachos? How pomet mikri? Two words in Rashi? Bottom of the page? Menorah ktana.
Yeah. That's what I didn't know that was a torch.
Right. Interesting. I would have said Eino Menorah. Rashi says, no, it's a menorah, but it's a menorah ktana. So I'm not sure if Rashi would agree with this Mahalach also. It makes so much brisker sense. These other parts, they're not integral to the structure of the menorah. They're additive. They're only necessary for the embellishment. When the menorah is embellished, zav, you require kik or miksha and kviyim. When it's not embellished, it's just a functional menorah, as we would say, then you scale it down. But arms? Arms are necessary to the basic menorah. They're not embellishments. Now this is, and this I'll end because we have to get you to the presentation. This is whether the arms are really part of the core menorah or they're just embellishments could be a really fascinating machlokas between Rishonim, how the menorah looked in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Arch of Titus. Okay, how does the menorah look based on our records of the Arch of Titus?
We all know, right?
Circular, curved.
Circular, right? Like really, really long arms. How does the Rambam describe the menorah? Diagonal, modern art. Okay, a modern menorah. This is more or less the Rambam's description of the menorah. In whose version would you say the arms are essential and integral to being a menorah? And again, this is a question of art. In whose version are they something added, even without them, you have a menorah?
Rambam,
it's essential. I can't hear what you're right. I think the Rambam is essential because they're inherently part of the menorah. Let's have arms coming out of a different vector. Then you're adding something, like this, according to Titus, according to what we think the menorah, this could be the menorah. These are just secondary elements. And without them, you still have the menorah, you just have the menorah katana. And for some reason, you need it even by other metals. This is what sounds like from Rashi. But the way I would read the Gemara, the way Shita reads the Gemara, is that without arms, nishke menorah, because this is the core image of menorah, okay, the mikshah is added, the kikar is added, the gavim are added, but this is your menorah. Without it, you can't. That's how I would explain the Rambam. And you'd apply the same methodology to the base. Do you need the base to be miksha, the Gemara and Peches and Menachos? What about the Yarech of the menorah? So all of a sudden, by looking at these three elements and in their association with the Zav, you create a category. That category helps you learn the rest of the sukkah. Okay? Stop here. I'll answer your question afterwards. Go back to this. Don't forget, party tonight at what time? 5:30 or something? They'll announce it. Besides party tonight, more Sufganiyot.